Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape our community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Although Latino people have lived in Wisconsin nearly as long as it's been a state, historian Sergio Gonzalez says Latino communities are often seen as perpetual outsiders. Gonzalez is the author of Mexicans in Wisconsin and Strangers No Longer, Latino Belonging and Faith in 20th Century Wisconsin.
His work explores how Latinos have integrated into Wisconsin communities, the impact of cultural exchange, and perceptions of immigrants. Gonzalez joins us to talk about the history of Latino immigration in Wisconsin and what it looks like today. Sergio, thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
Thanks for having me.
So I think there's this misperception that Latino immigration is a relatively new phenomenon in rural Wisconsin especially. But as your work has found, that's not the case. When do we first start to see large groups of Latino immigrants coming to rural Wisconsin?
Yeah, so, you know, we know that Latinos have been in the state of Wisconsin since the late 19th century, but Latinos have been moving beyond urban spaces since the first decades of the 20th century. And, you know, they went out looking for the same opportunities that European immigrants had been looking for before them, and that was better economic opportunity in farming. And so when a lot of agricultural industries began to turn to migrant labor to supplement, basically to kind of have that larger labor source to really ramp up the efforts. 1920s, 1930s, especially after World War II, we started to see large communities of Latinos moving into these spaces. So whether it was Texas Mexicans who are American citizens migrating up here, but also Mexican nationals who were brought in as part of the Bracero program in the 1940s. Puerto Rican migrant workers, American citizens brought in to work as well. Jamaicans, people from Belize, from the Bahamas, all in the 1940s and 1950s going to all parts of rural Wisconsin.
You mentioned something interesting inside of that, the Bracero Project. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah. In 1942, the United States, of course, is ramping up the wartime effort. Young men are going overseas to serve in the armed forces. People are moving out of rural spaces to find really good jobs and industrial labor in cities. And so farmers need labor to continue this work, specifically to feed men overseas. And so what does the U.S. government do? It signs an agreement with the Mexican government to basically ship Mexican nationals into the United States. And when I say ship, I mean that explicitly because they were coming over as imported workers. They would sign these limited term contracts where they would go and work in industries all across the country, in railroads, but specifically in farming. And so Wisconsin, which of course depended on workers to do things like the cherry industry, the cucumber industry, sugar beets, you name it, needed workers to fill those roles. And they found them in places like Mexico, and they found them in the Caribbean as well, black migrants who would arrive here to work all across the state.
Yeah. Now, a movement to deport people is really what happens after that. People who had come to help farming and other production throughout the country, it really kicks off in the 1950s, and it becomes the largest deportation effort in U.S. history. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, these things are intimately connected. You know, the Bracero program in the 1940s makes very clear that there are economic opportunities in the United States and there's employment opportunities here. Unfortunately, that program for those Mexican nationals back in Mexico are pretty limited because they're limited term contracts and there's only a certain amount of spots that are available. But that doesn't mean there's only a certain amount of jobs available in the United States. And so at the same time that the United States opens up this guest worker program in 1942, we also saw the beginning of a rise of undocumented immigration from Mexico into the United States. And so you have workers coming over who perhaps had not been able to apply for the Bracero program, but they still need to provide for themselves and for their families. They cross the border surreptitiously without legal documentation. And they go wherever someone will offer them a job, including here in Wisconsin, across the Midwest, all across America. And so with this growing undocumented population, some Americans, of course, become very alarmed that there are these people who are existing in this country who don't have citizenship, who don't have a formal relationship with the state. In the early 1950s, amidst economic recessions, the federal government decides to initiate a very vast deportation scheme. President Eisenhower calls it Operation Wetback. And its intention is basically to round up all of these people who have coming to this nation have been recruited into the country to do this work. It destabilizes communities, it destabilizes economies, and it's pretty disruptive. Unfortunately, what it also sets is a pattern that future presidential administrations follow. Whenever there's an economic recession, they will turn to similar tactics to round up these people who are now seen as surplus labor and then send them back to their home countries.
Looking at this idea of the country being full, especially, I think if you go to a lot of small towns in Wisconsin, you might not think that's the case. There are so many small towns throughout the state of Wisconsin that are really losing population, losing people. And in fact, Latina immigration has helped a number of communities. So looking at that whole picture, right now, how would you describe the relationship between Latinos and the overall communities in rural Wisconsin towns?
I mean, I would say it's complicated, Joy. I mean, I think you're pointing to a very real fact, which is if you look at the material circumstances of some parts of our state, it's very clear that there has been demographic decline and that the prospects of these spaces, if we look in the next 10 years, much less the next 50 years, are pretty dim, right? If we just think about, like, what will the replacement of communities actually look like? In many of these spots, Latino migration, in-migration into these locations represents the only form of vitality in terms of kind of reviving some of these spaces. And we can look at that in different spaces. We could talk about economically in terms of the labor market. We could look at schools and kind of the growth and the regrowth of elementary schools and kindergarten programs that perhaps had declining population over the last few decades. We can talk about that in cultural spaces and social spaces and the way in which Latinos kind of revive some of these spaces as well with their own traditions and their own customs. That, however, if we talk about the material, it's very different from the way people feel things. And it's hard to separate the fact that perhaps many rural Wisconsinites have the sentiment that they've been left behind, that they've been abandoned, that they don't have the resources they think they need. And it's hard to disentangle whether or not that's true or not. It's the way in which people feel. And that manifests in many different ways. Sometimes people can find a sense of solidarity with newcomers and say, we have similar circumstances here. Perhaps we can find a way to bind ourselves as a community. But unfortunately, oftentimes what that actually means is that the newcomer is seen as someone who's invading a space and someone who's there to take the remaining last bits of resources, as opposed to seeing that person as someone who brings opportunity, someone brings a new future for that location.
Yeah. It's interesting just how many communities really celebrate their immigrant past in small towns in Wisconsin and then do seem to have a reluctance, let's say, to accept new people into these communities. What would you say are some of the overall misunderstandings about Latinos in rural Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think you're keying on one of the things that has always bedeviled me as a lifelong Wisconsinite, but as also someone who is the son of Latino immigrants, Mexican immigrants to the state, that Wisconsin is very proud of certain aspects of its immigrant past. And we see that reflected in kind of the cultural sites that we celebrate, whether it's a place like Old World Wisconsin or, you know, our beer culture, which is very solidly based in our German or Swiss past, or cheese. I mean, all of these different things, bratwurst, right? All these things that kind of make Wisconsin what it is. We can say this very clearly, Wisconsin, it's proud of its immigrant history. And yet, when we talk about its immigrant present and its immigrant future, we sometimes draw lines about what is authentically Wisconsin. And so we talk about Latino immigrants as being newcomers, as being exotic, as being strangers in communities, as opposed to thinking of them as being another chapter in Wisconsin's long history of immigrant belonging and immigrant making into this space. And so, you know, one of the things I would hope people continue to wrestle with as we look at a place like Arcadia, Wisconsin, that has been absolutely transformed. And Arcadia is kind of the space that people often refer to, but it is a perfect case study. And it's one that I think is going to be replicated in other parts of Wisconsin over the next few decades. Is how do Latino immigrants arrive within a longer history of remaking spaces as part of an immigrant tradition, but what new things are they introducing into this space as well, right? So that Latinos don't have to be shoehorned into this idea of what it means to be a Wisconsinite, what it means to belong, what are the things you need to throw off about yourself in order to fit into this space. Because, you know, when we think about hospitality, this kind of guest and host relationship, we need to begin to trouble that. And to understand that Latinos are not guests in Wisconsin. They have been here for over 100 years. And if people are being honest with themselves, they're going to be here for another 100 more.
Yeah. Now, we are in a very specific moment in our history, both as a state and a nation. Wisconsin is, of course, a swing state. We have a big election coming up. And we have one candidate who is really proposing some extreme changes. He is proposing the largest deportation effort in U.S. history. We, of course, talked about what happened in the 1950s. And if you Google some of the images from that time, you're going to see a lot of people in basically cattle cars who are being driven to concentration or relocation camps. It was a really ugly time, and we're talking about at least what he's proposing, candidate former President Donald Trump, something much larger than what happened at that time. What are the realities of what that would mean for Wisconsin communities?
I don't think anybody can actually wrap their head around what this would materially, physically mean. Because, you know, first of all, there is the outright lie that he mentions that there are, you know, 20 million undocumented people in this country, which is, you know, nearly double of the number that are actually living in this country, that have been living here for decades. But if we wrap around our heads, you know, in a four-year term that he would be responsible for detaining and deporting 11 million people in the United States, I don't think anybody can actually imagine what that would look like physically, but also the allocation of resources this would entail. What would it mean to communities to have to reallocate policing and law enforcement resources to do this type of work, much less the reality of what this would mean for economies all across the state? And I don't think listeners would be surprised to know, of course, that the first place I think of is our dairy industry. Wisconsin, of course, is the number two dairy producer in the United States, number one in our hearts, of course, but number two in terms of production. And that's an industry that is heavily dependent on immigrant labor, right? The majority of workers who work in the dairy industry today are immigrant, and the majority of those workers are undocumented. Now, we have wrestled with this question numerous times over the last decade here in Wisconsin because our state legislature and local common councils have tried to pass legislation that would force local law enforcement to act as an auxiliary arm of immigration and customs enforcement. These are often known as like 287G agreements, secure communities agreements. You know, our state legislature in 2016 tried to pass a similar law for the entire state, and they didn't get passed. Why did that law not get passed in 2016? Because dairy farmers picked up the phone and called their legislators and called the governor and reminded them that were these laws to pass, these industries would be devastated. And so when we think about how people are going to vote in the 2024 election, it's sometimes hard to wrap our heads around the way in which people might vote based on rhetoric, based on vibes, based on perhaps some mythic idea of what they want the country to be and what the material reality would be for them, their families, the industry that makes this state America's Dairyland.
Well, we will see what the future holds. Sergio, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you, Jeff.
Sergio Gonzalez is an assistant professor of history at Marquette University and the author of the books Mexicans in Wisconsin and Strangers No Longer, Latino Belonging and Faith in 20th Century Wisconsin.
You can find more interviews like this one by visiting wuwm.com/lakeeffect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.